Good morning and welcome. It's week five here in Tallahassee. Thank you for joining us for today's Florida League of Cities Monday morning call-in. For those that are new to the call-in, and I hope there aren't many of you, seeing how it's week five, we start the call with each of the lobbyists discussing the key bills they're watching and working on this week and where we need your help on the advocacy front. Once the lobbyists have shared their updates, we'll open the call for questions. If you'd like to ask a question, press star 9 on your phone. As a reminder, this call is being recorded, and we will send an email out with a summary of the call, as well as a link to the recording later this afternoon. Please note, it's not possible to cover every single bill we're tracking or working on during a 30-minute call-in, but for a comprehensive list of bills that our lobbyists are actively working on and monitoring, go to flcities.com. Hover over the Advocacy tab and click on Legislative Bill Summaries. All right, so it's week five. Last week marked the end of some of the House subcommittees. That means that bills in those committees, unless something drastic happens, are most likely dead. That's good news. However, some of the subcommittees still continue to meet, and week five marks the halfway point, but it's going to be a busy week because there are lots of bills that we are working on agendas this week. So we had a successful legislative action days last week, but your work is not done. So with that, I'm going to kick it over to Charles Chapman for our first update.
Good morning, everybody. Only have two pairs of bills to provide you information on today. HJR 7017, which is the proposed constitutional amendment that would tie homestead exemption adjustments annually to a consumer price index, and its implementing bill, House Bill 7019, both passed off of the House floor last week. So our current posture is we're continuing to press our efforts in the Senate in order to combat this language. The hope would be is that if there would be a companion bill that would be floated in the Senate, is that we can get some good amendments to these bills for protecting our members, protecting your tax base, and the like. So what we need from you on these on this constitutional amendment and implementing bill is to continue to keep reaching out to your senators and tell your story about how this bill will negatively impact your city. The more stories you can provide to your members, the more real this becomes, and the better chance we have of getting a successful amendment or to bottle this up in the Senate. So please continue to reach out to your senators. On House Bill 609 and its companion Senate Bill 1184, these are your local business taxes. House Bill 609 by Representative Botana was amended last week, so it's no longer a repeal of the local business tax, but it is a cap on the amount of revenue that you can generate, as well as a cap on your rates, setting a base year in fiscal year 23-24. What does that mean outside of legislative language speak? That means you cannot make any more money out of local business tax than what you made in the fiscal year 23-24 year, and you can only either hold your rates steady or decrease those rates moving into the future. It was heard last week as amended in its first committee of reference. It was supposed to go to the local administration subcommittee as its next stop. That reference was removed Friday afternoon, so it is now going to its third committee of reference, State Affairs. State Affairs is scheduled to meet on Wednesday. We will not know the agenda until later today to see whether or not House Bill 609 will be on the State Affairs agenda for Wednesday. We are actively reaching out to the sponsor to highlight our concerns, discuss through problematic areas of the bill, and hopefully maybe we can get some relief. Senate Bill 1184 by Senator DeSigley is the companion on local business tax. Good news on that front, it still has three committees of reference. Its first committee is Community Affairs. The bill is not up this week in Community Affairs. And from what we're hearing is that this is the last week Community Affairs will meet. Whether or not these references are adjusted is still mysterious to us. We will be working this bill over in the Senate to make sure that that does not happen. But again, what we need from you is to contact your legislators and impress upon them the importance of local business tax in your community. With that, I will kick it over to David Cruz.
Thank you, Charles, and good morning, everybody. This morning, I wanted to give an update on two issues. First is going to be mobility fees and mobility planning, and the second update I'm going to give is on the sovereign immunity legislation. So let me kick things off on the mobility fee front. Good news on this bill. This is a priority of the League of Cities. It is a bill that we think adds some needed clarity, so it is supported by the League. It's House Bill 479 by Representative Robinson and Senate Bill 688 by Senator Martin. The House bill, as of last week, has passed all committees of reference and is now awaiting action on the House floor for a final vote of the House. Just for a quick reminder, this bill brings some needed clarity by defining terms like mobility fee and mobility plan in state statute, and then it makes an important change when dealing with transportation concurrency. Specifically, the bill says that there's going to be one local government that's going to be in charge of collecting that fee, whether it's an impact fee or a mobility fee, and it's going to be the local government whose jurisdiction is the one approving the building permit. That change specifically has been one that's been opposed by counties. Despite our support for that change, I would say that where I would definitely need some help is to make sure that you're talking to your legislators. All of the House members now will get an opportunity to vote on this bill, and so please encourage them to support the bill. The other part that I would need some help is that if you have a contract lobbyist, I would encourage you to reach out to them and ask them to support the bill on your behalf, number one. And number two, if they're not going to be doing that for you, at least make sure that they're not working on this bill on the side of the counties, because there's certainly been some situations where there could be a conflict, and we certainly wouldn't want that to be happening. The House side, Senate Bill 688 by Senator Martin has passed two committees. It has one more committee to go. It's now in the Senate Rules Committee. And so I would encourage you to reach out to your senators on the Senate Rules Committee and express your support for Senate Bill 688. With that, let me switch gears and give you the update on sovereign immunity. So we've gotten to the point where the House bill and the Senate bill are starting to look a little bit differently. The House bill is House Bill 569 by Representative McFarland. And at its last committee stop in the House Appropriations Committee, an amendment was offered that actually made some positive changes on two issues that the League of Cities had been advocating strongly to make. The first positive change was, despite this bill increasing caps to now $400,000 and $600,000, it would go ahead and no longer tie those new caps to a CPI where they would increase annually for inflation. So that amendment removed a tie to CPI, and so the 400 and 600 would be fixed. The other thing is that it went ahead and tied these new caps to the date the accident happens rather than the date of final judgment. That's been a change we've been asking for since the beginning, and so that was positive as well. The Senate Bill 472 by Senator Broder, passed its first committee of reference. It's now waiting to be heard in the Senate Appropriations Committee. That bill also raises the caps to $400,000 and $600,000 respectively, and it does tie that to a CPI where the $400,000 and $600,000 would be adjusted for inflation every 5 years. That bill still ties those new caps to the date of final judgment, so that means that if somebody slipped and fell today in your city hall, for example, the caps in place would not be the ones that apply to that claim. It would be the caps in place at the time that there was a final judgment, even if that means it's a jury verdict 3 years later. And we think that's extremely problematic, and we hope to remove that from the bill. So that's the update on sovereign immunity and mobility fees. And with that, I'll go ahead and pass it over to Jeff Branch.
Thanks, David. Good morning, everyone. Up tomorrow in Community Affairs is Senate Bill 684. By Senator DeSigley dealing with residential building permit. We are opposed to this bill. This is the first stop of this bill in the Senate, and it's different from the House companion. So here we go. The first bill of Senate Bill 684 has two parts. The first part
only refers to governing bodies with a population of 30,000 or more as relates to creating a program to expedite the process for issuing building permits for residential subdivisions. Please note that this language, what we call the Lennar language, is in two other standalone bills that are moving. The second part of this bill refers to the shortening of the time frames, and that is for all 411 cities, local governments. And what it does is the following. It requires you to approve building permits within 5 calendar days. So the Senate bill has calendar days, the House bill has business days. It reduces the time frame of when you can ask for additional information from under current law, 3 additional requests, down to 2 additional requests. It also mandates that before you request additional information the second time, you must offer to meet with the applicant developer in person or by Zoom, FaceTime. And so we are asking that if you have a senator on this Community Affairs Committee, that you reach out to them to oppose this bill. We are expecting an amendment to drop. We won't know until later on today that could change this bill drastically. But as of right now, we stand opposed to this bill. With that, I'll hand it over to Rebecca.
Good morning, everyone. Today in the Ethics and Elections Committee at 2:30, they will be taking up a government accountability bill, Senate Bill 734 by Senator Engolia. This bill would require cities, counties, and special districts to have lobbyist registration requirements for anyone lobbying their city, county, or special district. And the bill also would prohibit a contract for a city attorney or a city manager from being renewed or extended in the 8-month period preceding an election for one of the governing body members. There's an amendment pending to the bill that would ease its implementation for local governments because it would require all of the lobbyist registrations to go through the Florida Commission on Ethics rather than each individual city or county. So that's Senate Bill 734 relating to government accountability. That's going to be heard today. Right now, we're keeping an eye on that bill, watching for bad amendments. The second bill that I want to talk about is going to be considered tomorrow in the Senate Community Affairs Committee. It's relating to local government actions, Senate Bill 1628 by Senator Collins. This bill revises one of the exemptions to current law, local ordinance requirements relating to business impact statements. It specifically limits the current land use exemption to only exempt ordinances relating to development orders, development permits, and development agreements. What that means is that any comprehensive plan amendment ordinance or any ordinance adopting or amending a land development regulation would no longer be exempt from the business impact statement requirement. That bill, which we are opposed to, is up in Senate Community Affairs tomorrow at 3:00. Oh, the other thing this bill does is that it would allow a business involved in the production or distribution of food or the production or distribution or storage of energy or in a essential sector relating to supply chain, which means like railways and ports, it would allow a business involved in those areas to request a state agency, the Public Service Commission, the Department of Transportation, or the Department of Agriculture to review a local government ordinance that has been adopted that allegedly impacts any of those sectors. The agencies have 45 days to review the ordinance and issue comments to the business and to the local government about the impact of the ordinance on those sectors. During that 45-day review period, the ordinance would not be able to be enforced by the local government. Again, that's Senate Bill 1628 relating to local government actions by Senator Collins tomorrow in Community Affairs at 3:00. We are opposed to that bill. Moving to the Senate special order calendar, the Senate Bill 770, Improvements to Real Property by Senator Martin, is going to be on the Senate special order calendar Wednesday, which starts at 9 a.m. This bill relates to the Property Assessed Clean Energy Program. It imposes additional consumer protection requirements on PACE programs. It also expands the eligibility of projects for PACE financing. And importantly for our interests, it addresses the problems that have arisen around the state relating to the business practices of the Florida PACE Financing Agency. This is an issue that's important to the league. We support this bill because it would address that issue. Again, that's Senate Bill 770, Improvements to Real Property by Senator Martin. Lastly, we are waiting for the agenda to come out for Thursday's Commerce Committee at 8 a.m. The reason for that is because that committee could take up the Municipal Utilities Bill, which is House Bill 1277 by Representative Busada Cabrera. This is the bill that establishes caps on enterprise fund transfers for electric, gas, water, and sewer utilities, and it also prohibits or eliminates the ability of a city to impose an extraterritorial surcharge for water and wastewater services. We won't know that agenda until another day or two, but it could potentially be coming up Thursday, 8 a.m. in the Commerce Committee. That's it for me. Next up is Sam Wagner. Thank you.
Thanks, Rebecca. Good morning, everybody. So a few bills I have up this week. I have House Bill 473 and Senate Bill 658, Cybersecurity Incident Liability by Representatives Jean Lombardo and Senator DeSigley, respectively. We are in support of this bill. The House and Senate bills are both up tomorrow and their second committee stops. These bills provide that a local government is not liable in connection with a cybersecurity incident. The second bill I have is going to be the vacation rental bill, House Bill 1537 by Representative Griffiths. This is the companion to Senate Bill 280 by Senator DeSigley. This bill, the Senate bill, is now in House messages. We are opposed to these bills. By 4:30 p.m. tomorrow, we will know whether or not 1537 will be up in its second committee this Thursday. This bill, the House bill, is different from its Senate companion in that it requires a $150 fee to register, or in a $50 fee to register and renew a vacation rental instead of a reasonable fee. It has a $300 fine instead of a $500 fine. There's no funding for DBPR. Allows a vacation rental owner to report their occupancy limit versus the Senate bill, which sets those limits in accordance with Florida Fire Code and a two-person per bedroom limit. It allows the process for revoking a vacation rental license remains the same, still 11 total strikes. If you're a post-2014 city, these bills have the potential to replace what you currently have. So here's the ask. Please reach out and contact your legislators and let them know that this bill will disrupt the stability of you found and then how this bill will impact your current short-term rental ordinances. The last bill I have for you all is 1530, Unauthorized Public Camping by Senator Martin. Its House companion is House Bill 1365 by Representative Garrison. We're currently monitoring these bills. These bills require a local government to remove and issue temporary permits to homeless who are camping on public lands or on rights of way. There is a liability component in there where any citizen of the city or business can sue a local government for a failure to adhere to the requirements in the bill. However, the league has offered some language that has appeared in the amendment that was filed to Senate Bill 1530. The amendment provides the city must be notified of homeless sleeping camping in rights of way. And the city was, if the city is given 5 days to cure the issue, if they fail to do so, then an affidavit can be filed, can be sworn and then filed for that lawsuit. Those are all the bills that I have up this week. If you guys have any questions, please let us know. Thanks, and we'll pass it back over to Casey.
Thank you, Sam. Before we jump into questions and answers, I just want to come back to 2 points that you heard made earlier. The first was a reference, or when Charles was speaking on the local business tax bill, he talked about how one of the committees of reference had been removed. We're entering silly season during session, and one of the things that will happen is a bill will receive 3 committees of reference, and if it happens to be stuck in a committee that's no longer meeting,
that bill sponsor can go to the chair of that subcommittee or that committee and ask for them to sign off on removing it from the committee. And so it's one way that they can breathe life into an otherwise dead bill. And so seeing that happen to the local business tax, I think signals that that bill is still in play on the House side. But it's something that happens infrequently in this process. And I just wanted to take a moment to explain kind of some of the inside baseball there. The second and probably most important thing or point that's been made was, if you have a contract lobbyist, make sure you know the other bills that they're working on. Make sure that they have disclosed to you any conflicts that they may have. Many contract lobbyists have a number of different clients, and sometimes their interests and your interests don't align. That lobbyist should let you know that they're working on something else, or at least when those potential conflicts exist. For us to be successful and try to pass some legislation, we don't need any of our friends working against us. And so our ask would be, make sure you're having a conversation with your contract lobbyist about conflicts and make sure that they are disclosing any conflicts that they may have on a bill. So with that, we'll jump into the question and answer portion of the call. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you'll press *9. And then once you're acknowledged, please state your name and your city. So *9 for a question. First question.
Yes, this is Lisa DeVito from City of Crescent City. I have two questions. On the homestead exemption CPI possible constitutional amendment, what is the tax collector's position on this? Do we know? And as well, on whose bill is the who is handling the homeless camping bill?
Sure. I'm going to go to Charles for the first one, which was relating to the position of the tax collectors on the proposed constitutional amendment. After Charles is done answering, Sam is our point person on the homelessness bill. So Charles, take it away.
Sure. Thank you so much for the question. On the Tax Collector Association front, they've been largely silent on this bill. I think they're monitoring it as it will impact them. More importantly, it would be the Property Appraisers Association that would get engaged on this issue. Now, they've not come out in opposition or support. We do know they're monitoring it because it will impact the way that they do their estimates for the property tax roll for the coming year. We have reached out to the Property Appraisers Association. We've received very little feedback other than that they're monitoring. In that instance, they've not officially weighed in opposition or support on the bill.
Morning, Lisa. Okay. Good morning. It's Sam. I have the public camping homelessness bill.
Right.
Any questions?
Okay. Number one, I'm very knowledgeable in this area. Number two, it would greatly affect our city. I'm very familiar with how this would work or not work. From what I can see, it would be a problem for cities. If I have your contact information, I can send you what I see being a problem with that bill.
Perfect. We'll talk offline.
Okay. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question.
Casey, this is Ann Deal, City of Seminole. I have a question for Sam about the public camping. And speaking about rights of way, many cities have state and county rights of way within their jurisdiction, within their city limits, but the jurisdictional control, for example, intersections, cloverleafs, that's DOT. How does the bill deal with rights of way that are not in our control but within our city limits?
So thank you, Ann. So to answer your question directly, I'm not sure, but what I can tell you is that the bill provides that if it's either a county right of way or a city right of way, it is absolutely within our jurisdiction to issue a permit or remove those folks to a certain location, a specified location. But in terms of whether or not it's a DOT controlled right of way, that is a phenomenal question. And I'm actually, that's the first time somebody's brought that up. So we're going to research that and take a look at it.
And the other piece of that, Ann, is we have a meeting this afternoon with the House sponsor. And so we can bring that point up and see, you know, what he has to say about that.
Because the county rights of way are also within our city. So there need to be clarification if the county would still be responsible, even though it's within our city, I would hope. So, but in my experience in several cities, DOT has the most violations because they have the largest tracts of right of way at interstate intersections.
Got it. Great point. Thank you for bringing that up, Ann. Next question.
Good morning, McLean Evans, City of Tampa. Could we get a quick update on House Bill 1277 and the associated bills that are seeking to eliminate extraterritorial surcharge for utility services and also reduce or eliminate transfers to the general fund?
Sure. I'm going to kick it to Rebecca O'Hara for that.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, House Bill 1277 has been referred to its last committee in the House, which is the House Commerce Committee. That bill has not been put on the agenda for Commerce because they haven't released the agenda. So we won't know if that bill is going to be taken up by the Commerce Committee this week or not. The Senate companion to that bill is Senate Bill 1510 by Senator Broder. It is not on any committee agenda in the Senate this week. It has not yet been heard by the Senate in its first committee of reference, which is the Senate Regulated Industries Committee. So no movement on the Senate bill yet, but the House bill is teed up to be heard in its last committee.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Next question.
Yes, good morning. Richard Cooper from Miami-Dade County League of Cities. I was wondering, there's a bill that I read recently in our local paper here by Senator Danny Burgess regarding the local ethics ordinances and how you can file or not file a complaint. Are any of you working on that one? And is it legal?
We are, Richard, and I'll kick it to Rebecca O'Hara to give you an update. I think you're referring to the government accountability packages that are out there. So, Rebecca, why don't you give us an update?
Actually, I think you might be referring to a different set of ethics bills. Richard, the Senate and the House both have bills that relate to the Florida Commission on Ethics. And it's House Bill 1597. And the Senate bill is Senate Bill 7014. These bills make some changes to the time frames by which the Florida Commission on Ethics reviews complaints and issues its findings of probable cause and takes further action on a complaint. We are monitoring those bills. We don't have a position supporting or opposing. In the Senate last week, as the Senate was considering the bill on the floor, an amendment was filed to the bill that made some changes also to local ethics, basically local ethics commissions and local ethics bodies. And the changes that it made were that it requires that a complaint that is filed before one of those local bodies cannot be based on hearsay. The complaint must be based on direct knowledge or information and not on hearsay. And that's essentially the major change that amendment made to the Senate bill. And that Senate bill is currently it passed off the Senate floor and it is in House messages. The House bill has not been amended in that fashion, but I believe the House and the Senate are communicating with each other on these bills, and I would not be surprised if the House bill were amended to line up with the language in the Senate bill.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome. All right, next question.
Next question.
Yes, hello. This is Brian Eastman from the City of Gainesville. I had another question about the public camping and public sleeping. I recognize that the purpose of this bill is for a homelessness regulation. You guys mentioned that from before, but I don't see those exact words in there. And I notice it says a county or a city may not authorize public sleeping or public camping on public property. Is there any worry that this could be used to, that this could change regulations related to recreational camping within county parks, city parks, anywhere where we have either tent camping or primitive camping?
Thank you, Brian. That point has been raised by a couple other cities. Specifically, I know that the town of Wauchula has a public park that they allow camping at that's on the Peace River, I think. The bill, you know, we have raised that issue to the sponsor. You know, obviously the bill hasn't changed yet, but that point has been raised in our conversations with the bill sponsors. And so, you know, we'll keep working with the sponsors to make sure that it doesn't impact, you know, any scenarios like the one that I just laid out for you.
All right, perfect. All right, thank you.
Next question.
Hi, this is Kimberly Rothenberg, and this is again on the public camping regulations. My question is, has there been any discussion regarding the constitutional question that's out there that the United States Supreme Court's taking up as it relates to the Eighth Amendment and having bed availability and things of that nature?
Yes, Kimberly. So we've looked at those questions, specifically the cruel and unusual aspects. There are some cases out there permissive, not necessarily mandatory, at least from a Florida perspective.
Agreed.
But those conversations have been had. That's why part of it is the wraparound services. So for instance, if we issue a permit, these individuals have to go to a location that's got running water. It's going to have to have, it's got to be like a cool and heating space, but also you're looking specifically at like drug rehabilitation and mental health counseling. Mm-hmm. So those are those wraparound aspects that help defeat, I think, what the intent of the sponsors is, defeat some of those Eighth Amendment questions.
But isn't that, I mean, just quickly, isn't that almost requiring cities to then put in place sufficient services to address whatever homeless population they have?
Yes, absolutely. That is exactly what the intent is.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Kim.
Yep. You,
Kim. Last question.
Hi, good morning, Jennifer Viscara, Sunny Isles Beach. I was wondering if there has been anything significant on Senate Bill 1178, the condo bill.
Thank you, Jennifer. The condo bill is one that we are tracking, but we haven't seen a direct municipal impact in that bill. If there is, I would suggest that you give me or Jeff Branch a call to raise those concerns, but I don't have, and I'm looking around our table, nobody on our team has anything to report on that bill.
Okay, well, for us, I'm starting paying attention because we're almost entirely condos. So for us, it's important, but I can, not necessarily a home rule issue. But okay, right,
yep.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. And I have one final question that came in through the chat lines. Charles, this is your issue area, and it deals with the supermajority vote to increase millage rates. Can you give us an update on that bill and maybe some clarification that's, you know, or some any amendments that were filed to that bill? But just generally, you know, where do we stand on that bill? Are those bills?
Sure. So the bill numbers, for those that are keeping score, it's House Bill 1195 by Representative Garrison and Senate Bill 1322 by Senator Angolia. A high-level summary of this is that it would require a two-thirds majority vote to increase your millage rate above the prior year. The bill in the House was amended to provide clarity that it only addresses a two-thirds supermajority vote when your millage is increasing from the previous year. Now, this is a nod towards the Truth in Millage Act requirements for something that all municipalities should be fairly familiar with. This is the Truth in Millage Act is actually referring to your rollback rates and any votes that would exceed the rollback rate would be a simple majority vote unless it is above the millage rate you levied the prior year. Then it would, if this bill were to pass, it would require a two-thirds majority vote. That's a very simple answer. There's some technical things in there. So if you have questions about the Truth in Millage Act and how this bill interplays with it, please reach out to me. I'll be happy to explain it, but it gets really technical really fast.
Thank you, Charles. All right. Stay close to your computers, your cell phones. We will send alerts out as bills get agendas, as bills get agended, as amendments get filed. This is the time of year where it becomes really important to stay in contact with your legislators, and we need your help to continue our successful effort. So thank you, everybody, for joining the call today. We'll see you next week, same time, same place. Have a great week.